Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Todd Feinberg, now 2 till 6 on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Oh, my, my. It is so much fun to be here with you. You uppity listeners. George Logan is going to join us in a couple minutes. George Logan is running for... Well, he announced this morning. He was a state senator from Ansonia. He's running for Congress in the 5th against Johanna Hayes. This is exciting. There's going to be a contest in the 5th Congressional District. George Logan is going to be a candidate. He's going to join us to talk about it. And it'll be, it's the beginning of a campaign season. The fight begins. Have you ever noticed that politics doesn't stop? It's continuous. It is now continuous. Maybe it always was. They were just more polite about it. But now it's all out there in the open. Everybody's always working, jockeying for position. Maybe it's taking a long view, thinking for a long time about whether you really want to do it, whether you really want to make everybody in your life miserable, because it's hard to run for office. It's hard work, and the whole family has to get involved. And then you have to announce early, and before you announce, you have to start lining people up to support you and, you know, do a lot of legwork. It's hard work. And then most voters aren't really paying any attention to it till the end, till the last couple of months, if at all. And that's how it works. But anyway, it's getting underway for an election that will take place in many months. So the good thing is to have a Republican contesting. This is something that we lack. There are no Republicans holding federal offices. There are no Republicans holding statewide office. It's a shame. So we'll talk to George Logan, and we'll find out a little bit about what his thinking is and how you pull this thing off. The thing I'm excited about is to hear the messaging begin. I want to hear the ideas be exchanged. I want to hear somebody, a Republican who's stepping up to run for a big seat, who will have a high profile. George Logan will have a high profile. And I want to hear what the strategies will be. You know, as it unfolds, we're not going to hear it all right now. But the thing that I will be watching for, so you might want to do it as well so we can talk about it, is what exactly do you say about the failures of Democrats, particularly with regard to urban issues, because Representative Hayes runs heavily on identity politics and urban politics and stuff. So the question is, how do you drive a wedge there? And this is something Republicans have to start to do. And I think that's why this seat is a particularly fun one to think about watching. Let's see if George is ready here. Hi, George.
Hey, how's it going?
George Logan, former state senator. It's going well. Nice to have you here.
Oh, good to be here on this wonderful rainy day today.
I was just saying to the audience about how, it's not fun to run for office necessarily. Parts of it might be, but it's a burden on family, and it's a it's a tall order to run for office, and it takes a long time to think about doing and to figure out if you're going to do it, and then diving in like you're doing right now. You announced this morning. What leads you to do this?
Well, you know, I come from humble beginnings here in Connecticut, and it's just kind of my way of giving back. There are so many different people and organizations that helped me out when I was growing up, and I just have it in me, you know, to try to, you know, volunteer and help the community in the, you know, best way that I can. So I've got this, I think, opportunity that, you know, it's almost a once-in-a-lifetime, you know, kind of thing, and I'm going to give it a go.
And what are the things that you see that you can provide? What you just said suggests that there's something missing in the way the district has been represented. And what would you bring that's different?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I can do a better job than the incumbent in terms of focusing on the issues that are important to the people of the 5th Congressional District, which is, from me talking to folks, affordability. The cost of living is just going up. I think inflation is going to be a huge issue, and we need someone that's going to be present and more interested in representing their interests, right, in the 5th Congressional District than those of the left-leaning, you know, progressive, you know, Biden liberal policies in Washington. That, you know, I think the focus of the incumbent now, Congresswoman Hayes, you know, is more on Washington priorities and not as much on the priorities that are important to the residents, the people, the taxpayers, the parents, the teachers in the 5th Congressional District. And that's what I'm going to bring when thinking positively when I get down to Washington to represent them as their congressman.
So you're talking about, and I think this does happen to people who go to Washington. They get steeped in Washington politics and the party fights, so the left-right divide, and then they become a representative of the divide rather than representing the interests of their people. And then they're worried about which groups they're lining up with and who's giving them money and whether they get to go on MSNBC and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'll give you one stark example. When Congresswoman Hayes was running for office the first time, she said, promised that she wouldn't vote for Nancy Pelosi to be Speaker of the House. The first thing she did when she got in there was vote Nancy Pelosi in as Speaker of the House, and voted in line with Nancy Pelosi. You know, the stats I'm reading says 100% of the time. So that's a stark contrast, for example, of what she said she's going to do and what she's actually doing. And you know, I just think she's been relatively ineffective as a congresswoman representing the 5th Congressional District. Certainly, I think the politicals in Washington and the Squad and Nancy Pelosi, you know, she's probably the darling of that group. But, you know, she's not, I believe the congressperson for the 5th Congressional District is not there to, you know, necessarily do the bidding and follow the priorities of those leadership in Washington. It's there to make sure that they're pushing those priorities and interests and issues of the people that they were elected to represent, you know, here in this case, the 5th Congressional District. And, you know, I did that as a state senator for the district that I represented for 4 years. And I plan on representing the people of the 5th Congressional District in Washington. And I'm going to do that by continuing to get out to events, meeting people on a regular basis. I am a member of various groups in the community, so I've got a lot of ties and connections in the 5th that I intend to build upon to make sure that I always have the pulse of the people in the district and that I represent their issues and concerns in Washington. And right now, the top that I'm hearing on a regular basis is affordability, the cost of living, healthcare is huge, education, choice. Folks are just tired of this one-size-all sort of policymaking that's coming out of Washington. So I just think that the interests of the folks here in Connecticut need to be represented more in Washington. And also, what about this, it really bugs me, this, one-party rule that we got going on here, condition that we go on here in Connecticut. So I'm throwing my hat in the ring to change that. You know, the entire congressional delegation is Democrat? Really? The entire leadership in Connecticut from in the House,
statewide office.
Statewide offices are all Democrat. You know, this is a time when folks are talking about diversity, inclusion. You know, diversity of ideas. I just believe that we need someone that's more conservative leaning, representing us as far as our congressional delegation, because I'm running for Congress in Washington. And right now, I think our congressional delegation is just way too left liberal leaning, and we need someone that's more conservative. Now, I'm a moderate Republican, but I'm just far more conservative, particularly on fiscal matters, than what we have now for our congressional delegation. So, again, I think it's more important to have folks on both sides of the aisle, different thoughts and ideas, working together to come up with the best solutions to the common problems that we are all facing here in Connecticut.
We're talking to George Logan. He is a former state senator running for Congress in the 5th Congressional District. If you can hold on just a second, George, we'll take a quick break and then continue the conversation. 860-522-9842. More coming up on WTIC.
Miss something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Listen to the podcast on WTIC.com/podcast.
We're talking to George Logan on WTIC, former state senator, and now, a candidate for higher office. Pretty exciting stuff, running for Congress in the 5th Congressional District. And you mentioned affordability, George, and I think that's the key word for what's going on right now, that people in the state of Connecticut, taxpayers, are being crushed. It's there's reckless disregard for the value of the dollar and for the need of regular folk to be able to go to work and pay their bills, and it's just not possible anymore.
No, absolutely. I mean, the cost of everything from a gallon of gas to food, child care and health care is rising, due to inflation, taxes. You know, I really dislike this sort of one-size-fits-all policies that are, coming out of Washington and breaking the backs of our workers, families, and small businesses. You know, simply put, the dollar just doesn't go as far as it used to. And I just think the folks in Washington are just not, many of them just not getting it, and I think, unfortunately, the incumbent has fallen in line, and it's just fallen along with the bad policies that are coming out of Washington. And we need something different. And I'm going to, bring something different to Washington.
How about the spending, though, the deficit spending, the idea of putting on the backs of unborn generations the burden of trillions of dollars of debt? That must be a concern as well.
Absolutely. Spending money that we don't have, is not good governance. It's not a way to show true good leadership. And, not only is it affecting generations to come, it's affecting us here now in Connecticut. I mean, take a look in Connecticut. We've got factories and manufacturers that are having a hard time finding workers that are going to want to stay and work because they're getting all kinds of extra money from the government right now on a temporary basis. It's just a downward spiral here. We need a strong economy. We need the government to get out the way and let businesses thrive, so that they can hire workers. The best way for us to get out of this financial crisis in a sustainable manner is with people having jobs and opportunities, not government handouts. And we all know that, one, these government handouts are temporary. Two, they're slowing down and dragging the recovery because of it. And we need to focus on getting people back to work so that, they have opportunities to earn money, earn a living, and maintain their families and be able to pay their bills in a sustainable way. The government cannot do that forever and on a long-term basis for everyone here in the country. And they're not doing it, right? So what's happening is that we've got people that are suffering. We've got folks that are working, paying taxes. Inflation is going up. The affordability issue is becoming more and more problematic. And the current incumbent and the Biden administration, they just don't have good solutions for speeding up the economic recovery coming out of this pandemic.
Well, George, good luck with the race. And thank you for taking the time to talk with us. It's going to be a lot of fun to hear the debate develop between you and the congresswoman, and to hear those issues fleshed out, because it's something everybody desperately needs to hear, and people want to see a good debate.
Absolutely. Radical sensibility. That's what I want to bring. Let's talk about things in a sensible way and get away from this radical partisanship that we've got going on in Washington. So looking forward to getting out there, meeting more and more folks, and bringing those thoughts and ideas to this campaign and bringing it to Washington, making a change.
And we look forward to talking with you as things move on. George Logan, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good one. Take care, everybody.
All righty. Appreciate hearing from you. So there it is. There's an introductory interview, and we can keep that as our baseline as things develop, because you know how campaigns go. George Logan running for Congress, it's a different kind of campaign. It's not one that we've had a high-profile race on in the past couple of cycles. So hopefully this will raise it up another notch. Not that there haven't been good contenders. There have been great contenders, but George just brings a little higher profile to it, and I think we'll make a lot of noise, and we will hear how he articulates the issues. This is what I'm looking for. I want to hear great arguments being made that are updated to the moment and to the sensibilities of the moment and to the needs of the moment. That everybody's got to hear that. That's what makes a campaign resonate. That's what makes us understand that, okay, this is, we'll feel better when we hear that, because everything gets clearer when you hear your frustrations turned into political rhetoric. Then you can say, okay, this is where we're going to go with this. This is how I'm going to get helped from the crushing debt that Washington is creating, the crushing debt in Hartford that has mortgaged our futures and made it untenable to live, and they still want to raise taxes. It's just it's a long way to go. There's a lot of work to do. So it's good to have George Logan in that race, and we'll see what happens. Okay, we're going to pause for a news update, and then we've got a whole show to do. So stay with us on WTIC.
Feinberg, now 2 till 6 on WTIC, News Talk 1080.
Good afternoon, Todd here, WTIC. Whoa. Nice to have you along for the ride. Thank you so much for tuning in. Seriously, sincerely, always thank you for tuning in. I believe that we are coming to a juncture in politics that's a critical one for Republicans who have long avoided campaigning against Democrats in cities because they don't want to be called racist all the time for engaging in free speech and exchanging ideas that make sense to them and actually might be way better policy ideas than the ones that are in place. But Democrats have been able to get away with just scaring off Republicans through name calling and hatefulness. And I think that's going to change now as elections become more competitive every cycle, and as voters become more emotionally tied, fully committed to the party they identify with, that means you have to go searching for votes in places where you haven't. And the good news for Republicans is that urban areas are untapped areas, and there's got to be lots of low-hanging fruit there of people who would vote for Republicans if they had heard messaging and been asked for their vote. So we're going to talk with Dave Padley-Logos now. Dave is the director of the Political Research Center at Suffolk University in Boston. You'll hear them on the news when people are doing polls, citing polls, because Suffolk is one of the big polls and Dave is in charge of those. We've had him on before. We're going to talk to him about the problems pollsters are having, but also what Dave is doing is really something unique, and that is polling urban areas to find out what the people who live in cities actually believe. Let's do it right now. Dave Padley-Logos, thanks for being with us on WTIC.
Great. Thanks for having me.
So you guys are, one of the leading pollsters in the country, and you're doing something really interesting, polling
cities. Is this a new thing? Have cities not been treated as a separate entity that should be polled?
They have not. It's amazing, you know, with all of the pollsters out there, whether it's academic, private, they have not. What happens is you'll poll a state, and then you'll have a very small subset of a big city like Boston or Hartford. You don't have that research. And so if you're doing a 500 person survey, a very, very small amount of folks are going to come from that city. So we see it as the Wild Wild West. It's open territory for us. And given the policing and race issues, we think it's important to take a look at it, because we're trying to figure out whether or not the narratives that have been launched out there nationally are resonating in each of these cities. So we did Milwaukee last month, and we have an upcoming poll, and hope your listeners will tune in and your viewers to the Detroit poll, which will be out in USA Today on Sunday and Monday.
What are you learning so far? First of all, this is incredible that nobody's done it before, because what you just said about talking about things and thinking what you're saying must be right, but never getting any data to confirm it. We've got a whole country that's, I guess politicians are polling in cities when they're running in cities, but the public and news organizations don't know.
That's absolutely true. And you only see the polling, as you say, in mayoral races. So pollsters would push back and say, no, we polled the whatever city's race. We're polling the Boston mayor's race. The L.A. mayor's race is a jungle primary next to next June, and then next year in 2022. But the difference between our polling and their polling is that we are polling residents of the city, not voters, not likely voters, residents. And that means people like the 2% in Detroit who said they were either displaced or homeless get screened out in everyone else's polls. We have an opportunity, even if people are displaced or homeless or disabled, we have taken the measures to include those people because they are residents. Even though they may not be great voters or likely voters.
But I would think you're also, that's a great point about a different collection of people, because the first thing you do in a political poll is start filtering people for whether they're likely to show up to vote. But you're also asking different questions, I would think, and learning things about what residents believe in a city with your poll.
Yeah, I think what people are going to find is that they're people of color don't want to defund the police. That's what we're finding. People of color may want to rotate some funding to human services, mental health issues, but that's even close. People of color in Detroit, and you will see this when we release the poll, overwhelmingly want more police on the streets, more police on the streets. So this runs counter to a lot of the narratives that we've been seeing. And we're going to continue to poll. You know, Milwaukee was about a third of Black residents. Detroit is almost 80%. It's over three quarters Black residents. And, you know, we went into Detroit thinking that things would be markedly worse for police in Detroit. And they're not great. You know, there were certainly areas to improve, but we saw that they were markedly better. And you'll see the specific numbers on Sunday and Monday.
But what you're suggesting is there's a difference between maybe having a problem with aspects of policing that wouldn't say to the average person, unless they're in a highly emotional state, that I want to get rid of the police. And it's possible. I mean, we saw the Democrats run from the defund the police language. We saw the controversy after the last election cycle, where members of Congress were saying this was really stupid, Democrats, and we lost seats because of this. And we've even seen Democrats pretend they never said defund the police, that was a Republican meme. So obviously they recognize this as dangerous territory for them. And what you're showing confirms that was defund the police isn't the right political response to what the issues are in the city.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, what they were relying on were statewide polls showing that defund the police wasn't doing well. And then you had activists who were saying this doesn't reflect cities. And then, as I say, a couple of months ago, we came out with the Milwaukee poll, and now the Detroit poll is upcoming. And you're absolutely right. We are digging right into the urban areas, the urban centers with high populations of persons of color, and we're finding the same result. And in many cases, especially among Black women, they're, even though they're stopped less than Black men and they give police a higher rating, you know, there is opportunity there. So we're excited about the research and, you know, hopefully we'll be able to continue it.
We're talking to Dave Palaiologos. He runs the, I forget what it's called. What's your center called?
The Suffolk University Political Research Center.
Political Research Center. And polling cities is just fascinating. You know, it seems to me that we're getting to a point where Republican candidates for any kind of office are going to start walking streets they haven't walked before and trying to figure out what to say about some of these issues that are obviously more complex than what the public discourse would indicate. Are you asking questions that might dig deeper into certain issues like schools? I would think that there are a lot of people who are appalled with that they don't get better quality schools in urban areas, that they don't have more options, that they're blocked from getting seats in the charter schools they want to get their kids into. Are you getting into that kind of nitty gritty stuff?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned schools and education, because back in the day, education used to be a very high polled issue with a lot of residents, a lot of voters. And then it dropped off. It was healthcare and the economy. It was terrorism after 9/11. It was guns when there was a shooting. And education was always low single digits. Today, I think you've just hit it on the head. And we're starting to see this in both my private and public polling. Education, even in the Boston Mayor's poll, was within the margin of error being the number one issue. And you're going to see it strong in Detroit as well. And so, you know, I believe that we're on a trajectory, and it may be COVID inspired, but the issue is on the minds of everyone, Black men, white women, and the politicians who are looking at this data. And it's, you know, we only have a couple of data points, so I don't want to draw any broad-based conclusions, but I know from my private polling that's confirming the public polling that there are more than two public data points. This is going to be a very, very big issue, not only this fall, but also in the midterms in 2022.
So when you're talking about those numbers, you were talking about people rating it in order of importance. It wasn't coming out as people's top issue. And now that's rising, you're saying.
It's rising to the top, and it's on a trajectory right now that doesn't show any signs of slowing down.
What's the biggest surprise in your polling of urban areas?
I think that the biggest surprise is that the narrative that persons of color hate the police and want them to go away is, at least in these first couple of polls, is dead wrong. Persons of color, Black and Hispanic, you know, and there's a good amount of Hispanics in Milwaukee as well as Blacks, are saying the opposite. They want more police. They may not want full funding. They don't want to defund, but they may support some funds being diverted to social services, mental health. Mm-hmm. But the report card that I'm getting is that it's only among Black men who are stopped twice as much as Black women and, you know, have had that race conversation with their parent or guardian when they were a teenager, who are a little bit more skeptical and suspicious and who rate the police lower. But it's certainly not by the kind of numbers that we've seen and some of the national polling and some of the conclusions that have been drawn so far.
I want to take a quick break. And then when we continue, I want to talk about the last election, the problems that pollsters had in general with polling Republicans and predicting outcomes in campaigns with Donald Trump in them. We'll talk more with Dave Palaiologos. Stay with us on WTIC.
Something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Listen to the podcast on WTIC.com/podcast.
It's WTIC, Todd Feinberg here, talking with Dave Palaiologos. He runs the polling center at Suffolk University. He's on top of all the big issues going on in politics, and he's doing a poll of cities, as we talked about. And Dave, I want to talk about, we had you on several months ago, and we talked about the failure of polls, and that was perceived before the last election, before the last presidential cycle. It was perceived by my listeners, a lot of them who were very vocal, and criticized me for using polling data for one of my inputs for judging what's going on in an election. And I continued to do it last time, expecting that there was going to be a lot of mitigation on the part of polling firms to correct for the problems 4 years, you know, in the Hillary Clinton cycle 4 years before. And now it seems polling did worse in the last presidential cycle. And I wanted to give you a chance to address that and maybe fill people in on it.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, if you look at the polls taken in the last week or so, you know, you had the ABC poll was off 16 points in Michigan. Quinnipiac was off 13 in Ohio. You had 9-point misses in Florida and Nevada, Pennsylvania by, Emerson and Fox News and CNN. So it really wasn't a left or right thing. It was kind of a broad-based issue. I mean, I found myself explaining away the problems of the polling industry, and I thought we were going to get a big bump. And we posted on the suffolk.edu website all of the polls we released in the last 5 weeks, not the last week. And the 6 polls that we did all had the right winner and all were within the margin of error. In fact, 4 of the 6 were within 3 points or less. So I feel bad. I mean, there are for the other pollsters, there are a lot of other pollsters who are in this business because they know it gets a lot of attention from folks like you who quote polls. So it's been the gold rush of people getting into the polling business. And so we're using all different methodologies. And
you're saying there's a split in the industry. There's some people who are newer to it, who are less devoted to the science of polling, but like it as a promotional device. And there's others who are doing.
Absolutely. I mean, we do too. I mean, Suffolk is getting publicity. So am I. And it's great, but you have to deliver to get, you know, for me to get back on your show, you have to be somewhat accurate. And that's the incentive to be accurate. It's not a big competition between pollsters. We are respectfully competitive, but it's, you know, you lose that connection, you lose that appeal in that marketability because if you're not accurate. But in this business, it seems like ABC will still be as well publicized, even though they had a big mess, or some of the others. And and then you get this shoulder shrug at the end of every election.
But you were saying in the last couple of weeks of the presidential cycle, you guys did very well with your polls. Others didn't do so well. And has there been a discovery made about what the cause of the, my sense is there's a big group of conservative voters who become hostile to voting and to polling and become hostile to the idea of even responding to anyone. You know, there's a kind of an isolation bubble around a lot of Trump supporters. And is that a factor or is that just coincidental?
So APORT, which is our umbrella research organization, they did a study, and the study basically concluded that it couldn't have been the hidden Trump voters because the misses in the Senate and governor races were wider than the ones for Trump. So I think that might have been some of it, but they basically concluded that they couldn't conclude anything. They studied a lot of different things. They have a committee, they have tons of degrees, many more than mine. I take a different approach as to why people missed. And my reason is vastly different than theirs. I believe that it's all about geography. When you're a pollster, you gotta divide up a state by counties. So, you know, if you're polling Connecticut, for example, you have a certain quota for each county. And what happens is if I'm polling, let's say I have 500 in Connecticut for surveys and I'm polling 50 people, say, out of Hartford County, because that's ballpark what they would get. Mm-hmm. Guess who gets polled in Hartford County? Because there are so many people in Hartford County in this one city, Hartford. So people who live in Marlborough or Canton or, you know, Suffield, Connecticut, that are all in Hartford County, they can't possibly get the kind of interviews, they may never, none of them may be called. You may have entire towns and counties who don't get called. Mm-hmm. They're all going to the polls on election day. They're all voting, but none of them are counted. So I believe that it's the geography. You've got these population magnets like Boston, Hartford, Worcester, LA, that are sucking in all of the respondents in that particular county, unless a county is the city itself.
Always have been the case?
Yeah, but you'll never have a poll that does not count a city. You'll always have a poll that does not count a small town. And so what's the result of that? The result of that is that proportionally you're going to get just a few more calls in that county from Hartford, just a few less calls from some of those small towns like, you know, Plainfield or whatever.
Where there's more conservative voters.
There's more conservative voters. So that's going to be the balance. I mean, the pollsters didn't miss. They just missed on margin. They didn't hit it exact. And as I say, you know, we're not happy if we're right and we're off by 7 points or 16 points. We're right if we're within three.
All right, Dave Paleologos, great to talk with you once again. Suffolk University, it's great to have you here. We'll check in again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Let's get a news update. More coming your way on WTIC.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.